Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're stepping into a really interesting landlord-tenant situation that made its way through the New York courts. It's Garner v. Gerrish.
Yeah, it's a great case because it really drills down on how, you know, seemingly simple words in a lease can cause big legal headaches.
Exactly. It all revolves around this one agreement, a residential lease, actually, between friends, and how just one sentence led to a major dispute.
A single sentence, right. And it teaches a lot about the need for precision in legal writing, even for something as common as a lease.
So let's paint the picture. It's 1977. We've got a landlord, Robert Donovan, and he makes up a lease for his friend, Lou Gerrish.
Right. Just a friendly arrangement, it seems. Rent was only $100 a month.
Yeah. And critically, they did this themselves. No lawyers involved at all. Just, you know, two friends sorting it out on paper.
Which, well, that informality is often where the trouble starts, legally speaking. Intentions might seem clear between friends, but the law needs specifics.
Definitely. And the sentence, the absolute core of this whole thing was, Lou Gerrish has the privilege of termination of this agreement at a date of his own choice.
Hmm. And notice what's missing there.
Yeah. There's no end date, no fixed term mentioned anywhere, just that Gerrish could end it whenever he wanted.
That absence is huge. It immediately raises the question, well, how long was this supposed to last? Was it short term? Indefinite?
That became the big question. Okay, so fast forward a few years to 1981. The landlord, Donovan, he passes away.
And his estate, represented by the executor David Garner, naturally wants to manage the property, which includes dealing with Gerrish.
Right. So Garner moves to evict Gerrish, and suddenly this informal friendly lease runs smack into the legal system.
And that termination sentence gets put under the microscope. The estate wants the property back. Gerrish says he has the right to stay.
Which brings us to the central puzzle for this deep dive. Did that lease giving only Gerrish the power to terminate mean he could stay there basically forever, or at least as long as he chose?
Or was it just, you know, a standard month-to-month deal that automatically ended when the landlord, Donovan, died? That's what the estate argued.
It's a fascinating legal knot tied up in just a few words.
It really is. And to untangle it, we've got to look at how the different New York courts tackled this ambiguity.
Okay, let's start at the beginning. The initial courts, the special term, and the county court. What was their take?
They sided with the landlord's estate. They basically said, look, even if Gerrish could end at any time, that doesn't mean he gets to stay forever, especially after Donovan died. They called it a month-to-month tenancy.
A month-to-month. Okay.
And they leaned on some existing legal ideas, some precedent. One key case was Western Transportation Co. v. Lansing.
Okay, what did that case establish?
Well, it stands for the principle that if a lease only gives the tenant the right to terminate at will, the law often implies that the landlord also has that right. It kind of creates a tenancy at will for both sides.
Huh. So even though the paper only mentioned Gerrish's right, the court read in a right for the landlord, too. To make it balanced, sort of.
Exactly. It's about this idea of mutuality, fairness. The law often dislikes arrangements where one side is bound indefinitely and the other isn't, so it defaults to making it terminable by either party.
Interesting. So that principle of implied balance was applied here?
Precisely. And they didn't just rely on that one case. They also brought in Lepsch v. Lepsch.
And what did Lepsch add to the mix?
That case basically says that, as a general rule, a tenancy ends when the landlord dies, unless the lease explicitly says it continues.
Okay, so if the lower courts saw this as month to month, or maybe even a tenancy at will,
then under Lepsch, Donovan's death would automatically terminate that tenancy. It all fits together in their reasoning.
So based on that, the first decisions were Gerrish has to leave. But he didn't agree, right? He appealed.
He did. He argued that the specific wording privilege of termination at a date of his own choice wasn't just a simple month to month. He claimed it created something more substantial.
What did he claim it created?
He argued it gave him a determinable life tenancy. Essentially, the right to live there for his lifetime unless he chose to end it sooner.
A determinable life tenancy. So, like a life estate, but one that could end early based on his own decision. That's a much stronger right.
Much stronger, yeah. Much more security for the tenant than just month to month.
So the case goes up the chain, and this is important. The New York Court of Appeals, the state's highest court, they affirmed the lower courts, they agreed with the estate.
Yes, that's the final word. Despite Gerrish's argument about the unique language, the Court of Appeals upheld the earlier rulings. It was deemed a month-to-month tenancy, ending with Donovan's death.
Okay, but why? Why didn't that specific language, granting him sole termination power, convince the High Court? What was their reasoning?
Their main point was about leases without a fixed end date in New York. The default rule, the standard interpretation under state law, is that if a lease doesn't specify a duration, it's treated as month to month.
Even with that termination clause favoring only Gerrish?
Even with that. They acknowledged the clause was, you know, unusual, but they felt it wasn't strong enough on its own to create a life tenancy.
What would have been strong enough, in their view?
They said you'd need much clearer, more explicit language. Something like, for the term of the tenant's natural life or until the tenant's death. Words that leave no doubt about the intent to create a life estate.
So the absence of that really explicit life tenancy language was key.
Absolutely critical. Without it, the default month-to-month interpretation kicked in, and the landlord's death became the terminating event, drawing again on that Lepsch principle.
And they still saw Western Transportation as relevant too, the idea of mutuality.
Yes, those precedents about implied rights and termination upon death were definitely part of the underpinning for the final decision. They reinforced the conclusion reached by the lower courts.
Okay, so bringing it back to our listeners, especially law students digging into property law, what's the big practical lesson from Garner v. Gerrish?
Precision, precision, precision. Use clear, unambiguous language in leases. This case is just like exhibit A for how fuzzy wording, even if maybe well-intentioned between friends, can blow up into a serious legal fight.
It really shows that gap between what people might think they agreed to informally and how the law reads the actual words on the page.
Exactly. You have to explicitly define the lease term, how long it lasts, and spell out the termination conditions, who can end it, when, and how. Don't leave it open to interpretation.
You need to anticipate things, right? Like what happens if one party dies?
Absolutely. Address those possibilities directly in the document. Relying on assumptions or unspoken understandings is just asking for trouble later on.
So clarity isn't just good practice. It's essential to avoid these kinds of messes.
It's paramount. What seems obvious between the parties might look completely different to a judge trying to interpret it years later based only on the text.
This whole situation really makes you think about informal deals, doesn't it? That handshake agreement might feel solid, but legally, especially with property.
It often needs more. It raises that question. How could Donovan and Gerrish have done this differently?
Maybe a lease with a set term, even a long one, or specific clauses about what happens if the landlord dies.
Right. Or maybe just putting their actual understanding, whatever it was, into clearer written language, even without fancy legal terms. Just being explicit.
Yeah. Could have saved a lot of time and legal fees.
For sure. It just hammers home that in law, assumptions are dangerous. Precise language is your best protection.
So a final thought to leave everyone with. Consider the informal agreements in your own sphere. What does Garner v. Gerrish tell us about the difference between what we assume and how the law might strictly interpret things? Definitely something to mull over. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.